From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with an episode of Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday, a thrill seeker of sorts, placing ads in the local newspaper, seeking adventure. Oftentimes, when people respond to Box 13, Mr. Holliday finds that he gets much more than he bargained for. This broadcast, released for syndication on December 26, 1948, episode number 19 in the series. It's entitled Hot Box.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of the Star Times. Enclosed, you'll find enough money to do what I want you to do. Go to the Mason auction rooms and bid on an old Chinese teakwood box. I must have that box. And if you get it for me, wait for further instructions.
No address, no signature. Just wait for further instructions. Well, as Bobby Burns would say, the best laid plans of mice and men sometimes go wrong. And Bobby Burns knew what he was talking about.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Hot Box.
Doesn't sound very interesting, Mr. Holliday.
You never can tell, Susie. Now, suppose this teakwood box contains a Tamilian crown jewels, and suppose international jewel thieves are after them, and I get mixed up and...
Gee, go on, Mr. Holliday. That sounded wonderful. Well, what happens then?
Well, and then I... What am I saying? I must be out of my head.
Well, I think you should go. To the auction, I mean. Auctions are very interesting. I went to one once. They're like a gin rummage sale.
The gin, Susie. That's extra.
Oh.
Anyway, maybe I'll see what's in that teakwood box. You'll be able to reach me at the Mason auction rooms. Well, right there's where the plans begin to get twisted. I took a wrong turn and landed at the Mason auction rooms after the sale started. They just sold the teakwood box. Sold it to a scared-looking little guy. He was about 55, pale, and he kept looking around the room while they wrapped the box for him. It wasn't big, that box. Maybe about the size of a cigar box. But the way the little man hugged it to him when he left, it could have been made of radium. Okay, so I missed the boat. Or, I mean the box. But I wanted something for my trip across town, so I followed the pale little guy from the room. He looked around and saw me. I raised my hand to signal him, and that did it. He spun out to the sidewalk like a rabbit. I went after him. I wish I hadn't, because when he saw I meant to follow, he took a couple of wild looks around, and then...
Hey, look out!
He ran across the street against the traffic signal and right into the path of a car.
What happened here anyway?
I pushed my way through the crowd that gathered. The little guy was lying on the street.
I couldn't help it. He ran right in front of me. He ran against the light. Hey, did anybody see it? Did anybody see
it? Yeah, I saw it. It wasn't your fault.
No, it wasn't my fault. I was trying to stop. I wasn't going fast. I was just going to make the turn. Well, is he hurt bad?
The little man looked as though he was badly hurt. Somebody sent for an ambulance, then I remembered the box. I looked around for it. It wasn't on the street. He didn't have it anymore. I looked over the crowd. Nobody had it. Then I noticed the cab at the hack stand at the curb. And getting into it was a woman with red hair. And under her arm was the package. Before I could push my way back to the crowd, the cab was gone. But I saw its number. Okay, it'd be easy to check and find the driver's name and maybe ask him a few questions. Well, I waited on the street until the ambulance got there. The intern said it was probably concussion. But that evening, I drove to the Marchmont Apartments. Yeah, that was where the driver of the cab said he took the woman. I looked at the names on the mailboxes. 9 apartments in the building. Well, one way to get in was to push all the buttons and wait for the door to click open. I went in, but as I did, I looked out the door. Oh, there was a tail on me. I caught a quick glimpse of a man's face. He hurried past, but not before he gave me a good look. Well, that teakwood box was leading to something. After disturbing 7 occupants of 7 different apartments and getting 7 nasty comments, I rang one buzzer. The name underneath was Ruth Cornwall.
Is that you, Tommy?
Yes, Ruth.
Just a second.
Oh.
Good evening.
Who are you?
I'm not the Fuller Brush Man. May I come in?
Of course not.
I've come about a teakwood box.
Will you please go?
Oh, maybe you didn't hear me. I said I've come about the teakwood box, Miss Cornwall.
I don't know what you're talking about. And if you don't go, I'll ring for the manager.
All right. Ring for him. Well?
Is this a joke?
I don't know. That depends on you.
Well, I... Come in.
That's better.
Now, who are you?
My name's Dan Holliday.
Do I know you?
No, I don't think so. But I know you.
Oh, you do? From where?
From this afternoon, when you hopped into a cab with a package that belonged to a little man.
Oh.
If that was supposed to be a careless laugh, you need a lot of rehearsal.
What makes you think I'm the person you're looking for?
I just managed to catch sight of that beautiful red hair of yours.
Really, Mr. Holliday, I thought this was a joke at first, but it's getting a little absurd.
Oh, no, wait.
I think you better go now.
All I want is an explanation. What's in that box? What's in that box that makes it so important?
Well, if I knew what box you were talking about, maybe I could tell you.
Let's quit waltzing, Miss Cornwall. You wouldn't have let me in this apartment if you knew nothing about all this. But you were scared enough to let me come in and talk. That makes sense?
Why should it?
Because I could swear you seem relieved about something. Maybe you were expecting someone else to come after you. Were you?
Of course not.
All right, I'll wait.
I don't think you will.
Oh.
Does this make you change your mind?
Guns always have a habit of making a man think twice.
Just think once, Mr. Holliday, about leaving now.
Well, your arguments are stronger than mine, and I...
Get out of here quickly.
You're getting more company.
Get out!
Now, let's see. Anyone planning to sneak up on you could do the same as I did. Ring all the buzzers, get in the building, then come up here, but...
If you don't leave, I'll...
I don't think you will. You're very anxious to have me get out before this company gets up here. And you had better click that front door, or you'll get impatient and go away.
If I give you that box, will you leave?
Ah, now we're getting someplace. Okay, you talk me into it.
Wait. Here. Here it is. Now get out of here and don't come back.
What was in it?
Nothing. Now, please, will you go? For heaven's sake, please go. You got what you wanted. Now leave me alone.
Well, look, I...
Will you leave me alone if he sees you here?
All right, Miss Cornwall.
And please never come back. Never try to see me again.
I don't know what it was, but there was something about Ruth Cornwall that put me in sympathy with her. She needed help, wanted it, but it was as though she didn't dare tell me why. I went down the hall, ducked around a corner, stopped just long enough to look back and see a man go into her apartment. I went downstairs, out onto the street.
Keep walking, Bub.
Huh?
I said keep walking, right up to that alley.
Hey, what is this?
I think you know, but if you want to play 20 questions, I'll let you ask one. This, give you a hint.
Oh, when you pull that gun back, take it easy. I think you've got it caught in my ribs.
Now, walk. Far enough.
Now what?
Give me that box.
What box?
Ain't you funny?
Yeah, I do card tricks, too.
That's enough. Hand it over.
It seems to be my night to play give and take. Okay.
That's better. Now, good night, Holliday.
When the alleyway stopped spinning long enough for me to catch it, I I stood up on it. I looked at my watch. As closely as I could figure, the character who tattooed my head had put me out for a half an hour. See what you get when you put an ad in the paper advertising for adventure? You get it. With lumps. Well, there's nothing more I could do that night. My head felt like the inside of a bass drum in a band. And all I wanted to do was hit Betty by and let my head rest on a nice, soft pillow. Good morning, Sue.
Mr. Holliday, this man's been waiting for you.
Oh, you again.
Did you sleep all right, Mr. Holliday?
Like a top. I spun.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do anything, Mr. Holliday?
I wish you could, Susie.
Mr. Holliday, I know a man who wants to see you right now.
Uh-huh.
Can I persuade you to come along, do you think?
Yes, you seem to have a way about you. Susie.
Yes, Mr. Holliday?
If I'm not back in 3 hours, call up the insurance company and get back that last premium I paid in advance.
Huh?
That's enough. Let's go, Holliday. Here's Holliday, Mr. Conrad.
Oh, yes. Please come in. Sit down.
What's the idea?
Funny, I was going to ask you that. Here, take a look.
Well, that's the box.
But it's empty.
So it's empty. What am I supposed to do, fill it with Easter eggs?
Shut your trap, Holliday.
Take it easy, Jimmy. Maybe Mr. Holliday will tell us things. Now, Mr. Holliday?
Like what?
Look, I sent you the letter to Bitterness Box. I checked. Never mind how I found out who you were.
Oh, well, then you should know I didn't get the box at the auction yesterday.
I know, but you got it last night. From whom?
Look, that's the way I got it. Empty. What more do you want from me?
Information. Who had that box?
Does it make any difference? You've got it now.
I want what is in it.
That's the way I got it.
Jimmy.
Yeah, Mr. Conrad?
Did you see anybody take the box yesterday when that man was hit by the car?
No, whoever did got away first.
But no. Holliday, you went to the Marchmont Apartments last night. When you came out, you had the box.
And that's as far as it goes?
Not quite. Where'd you get it from?
Conrad looked hard at me. So he didn't know Ruth Cornwall. I could tell him and put her on the spot. But I didn't want to do that. Not until I found out a bit more. Conrad got up from behind his desk.
I don't know what game you're playing, Holliday, but I can tell you this. You won't play long.
And I'm telling you, I got the box that way empty.
All you have to do then is to tell me who picked up that box at the Edison yesterday.
Yes, and what if I don't?
Jimmy.
Yeah?
How hard is Mr. Holliday's head?
Not very.
Go ahead, then.
Wait a minute.
Hold it, Jimmy. Okay, Holliday?
What?
Look, you want what was in that box, right?
Sure.
Then let me go after it.
What are you talking about?
You didn't go to the auction yourself to bid for the box, which means that you didn't want anybody to see you get it. All right. Whatever was in that box is important to you. But if you beat me up, you'll never find out. You see, I'm the only one who knows who had it.
Well, we could go to the Marchmont and find out.
Sure. But you wouldn't find anybody because there's nobody there now.
You're smart, huh? Yeah. Smart.
It was a bluff. It had to be. But Conrad was afraid to call it. If he did, he wouldn't get what he wanted, he thought. Stared at me, and then...
Okay, Holliday, I don't know how you found out how important this is, but evidently you did. All right? How much do you want?
What makes you think I want anything?
Are you kidding?
Okay. We'll decide that after I get what you want.
Bring the notebook, and we'll talk it over.
It's a deal.
You won't be alone, Holliday. You'll have company all the way.
Oh, how nice. Jimmy has such a good face. You know, it'll do me a lot of good to be seen with him.
Yeah, if you don't come through, it could also do you a lot of harm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to Hot Box, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, I could have wound up the whole thing by telling Conrad about Ruth Cornwall. But I didn't want to drag her in unless she was going to double-cross me. Okay, there had to be a starting point. And for me, it was the hospital where the little guy who had bought the box was taken after his accident.
Well, I'm afraid you can't talk with him, Mr. Holliday. As a matter of fact, there was another man here yesterday. And he frightened our patient so badly that he had a relapse.
Oh. Doctor, what's your patient's name?
Ralph Sanders. He's an ex-convict. Just got out of prison a few days ago.
Oh. Okay, thanks, Doctor. Here's my name and phone number. If I can talk with him at any time, please call me, will you? So that was a dead end. Then I got the idea that the people at the auction rooms might be able to help.
Here it is, Mr. Holliday. That box was part of lot number 509.
What does that mean?
Well, lot 509 was in storage here. For a time, we received the money to pay for the storage, and then it stopped.
How long ago?
Oh, it must have been over 60 days. We hold goods that long and then offer them for sale to pay for the storage charges.
Mm. How long did you have this lot 509?
Well, let me look at the books. 4 years.
Oh. Do you know the name of the person who owned the goods?
James R. Conlon. At least that's the name on our books.
Did you make any attempt to locate this Conlon after the payments on storage stopped coming in?
Yes, we did. But we couldn't.
I see. Oh, one more question. Did you advertise a sale?
Oh, yes. We're bound to by law.
You advertise in the papers?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. Well, there was one place to find out about James R. Conlon. The morgue of the Star Times. And what I found out began to slope the merry-go-round enough to let me see some of the things a little more clearly. Then at my apartment later today. Hello?
Mr. Holliday?
Yes, who's this?
This is Dr. Evans, City Hospital.
Oh, yes.
Sanders is conscious now.
Oh, fine.
But I'm afraid that he won't live. And since you were the only person who left his name, I thought you'd want to know.
May I see him?
Well, you haven't much time.
I'll be right there, Doctor. Saw the poor little guy. He was pathetically anxious to talk. He had been Conlon's cellmate in the penitentiary. And Conlon had talked. He had to talk to someone. Tell about something he was saving up for when he got out. And it was Sanders he told about a teakwood box. And what was in it. Never dreaming he'd die in prison before Sanders got out. Okay. Now it was my turn. I went outside. Hello, Jimmy. Still playing tag with me?
What's the idea, Holliday?
Oh, I'm full of ideas. But the best one of all is, let's go to Conrad.
You got that book?
Not with me, pretty boy.
You want to get your head singed?
Look, we're going to Conrad right now.
Why, I ought to poke
you. You ought to, but you won't. Now, let's get going. If we stand here one more second, I'll let that notebook loose where it'll do the most good. Or the most harm. And that, Big Ears, depends on the point of view.
Why, I... Okay. Okay, but you're asking for trouble.
Fine. Let's go hunt for it, shall we?
Well, hello, Holliday. Glad to see you back.
You're an optimist, Conrad. Here, I brought your son back with me. Say hello to Papa, Jimmy.
What's this all about?
I just got tired of having Jimmy haunt him.
Jimmy, has he got it?
Yeah.
Where is it, Holliday?
I know.
With you?
Oh, no, don't be silly.
Jimmy, you let him get it and do a fade-out on you.
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, Jimmy was with me all the way, and a more gruesome companion no man could ask for.
Stop yapping.
Okay. A while ago, I talked with a little guy named Ralph Sanders.
Sanders? So?
He was Conlon's cellmate in prison.
Go on.
It seems Mr. Cunn had a notebook filled with a lot of details that would blow you and your nice bunch right out of the window.
Where is it?
As if I tell you. Now listen. You found out about the box because Sanders talked. The prison grapevine picked it up and it got to you. You wrote me. Wanted me to bid on the box and get it for you. The joke's on you, Conrad, because I didn't have the faintest idea what was in that box before today.
How long do you think you'll enjoy this big joke on me?
A long, long time. I'm walking out of here right now with no tail on me.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Because if I don't show up where I'm supposed to, in exactly 1 hour, that notebook goes to the police.
You're smart. We can make a deal.
Oh, no. Remember, I'm walking out of here. Oh, I forgot. I forgot. Good night, Jimmy. Well, his head's not very hard either, is it? Sure, I walked out all right, but I expected to feel my back pick up a few ounces of lead on the way. I didn't. I was very happy about that. Ah, there was still one more thing to clear up. Ruth Cornwall. If she had that notebook and Conrad found out about it, then I was out in the cold. I got to the Marchmont apartment as fast as I could because it could be that she was going to do a little business with Conrad herself. I got in, went to her apartment.
Yes? Oh.
Sorry, I couldn't wait to be invited in.
I told you not to come back here.
Yes, I know, but I'm back.
What do you want?
Last night you gave me a box. Now I want what was in it.
There was nothing in it.
Not even a notebook with some very startling things in it? About a certain Mr. Conrad and his gang?
So you found out about that?
Yeah, but in finding out, I put myself in a wonderful spot to get acquainted with a mortician.
All right, so you know. But what good will it do you?
What good will it do you?
That's no concern of yours.
Oh, yes, it is. Put yourself in my place. Conrad thinks I've got the notebook. He also knows who I am and where I live. Now, when he finds out I don't have the notebook and can't hold it over his head, he's going to get awfully, awfully rough with me.
And that seems to be your problem, Mr. Holliday.
And you won't give me any help with it.
Why should I?
Fair question. I'll answer it. Because I don't think you want to see me get killed.
Look, I can't help you. Do you understand that? I can't help you at all.
Where's the book?
It's no use. I won't tell you. I won't tell you anything.
Anything? Why did you put that on the end?
Mr. Holliday, the last time you were here, I was at a disadvantage. Now, our positions have reversed. I think you'll leave now without giving me any more trouble.
All right. You ask for it. You'll get it.
What do you mean by that?
I did a lot of reading today, Miss Conlon.
No. Oh, don't call me that. You don't know that. You can't know that. No. No, you can't know that.
It was a throw in the dark, but it was where I wanted it to. The clippings on Conlon mentioned something about a daughter. Not much. But enough to give me a hint that Ruth Cornwall and Ruth Conlon were the same. I watched her for a few seconds and then...
All right. I'm Ruth Conlon. Are you satisfied now?
Not quite. What I said before still goes. Do you want me to get killed?
No. No, of course not.
And what are you doing with that notebook?
Well, if I tell you, what will you do?
That depends on what you tell me.
All right. I'll tell you. My father died in prison. No one knows I'm his daughter. No one. For 4 years, I've lived under another name, waiting for him to come home, waiting to help him get even with Conrad and the men who sent him to prison. Sure, he could have told things at his trial. He knew he'd been double-crossed, but he wanted to wait.
And now?
And now I don't know.
What don't you know?
I'm going to get married. You see, I didn't count on falling in love at 35. Falling in love with Tommy.
Oh, he was the man who came here last night after I left.
Yes. I had to get that notebook.
Because if someone else got hold of it, all the old scandal would be raked up again. People would find out who I was, that my father died in prison. Tommy would find out.
I see.
I waited a long time to get even with Conrad, but now I don't want to, because of Tommy. Oh, don't you see? I can't let anyone else have that notebook. I want a chance to live like anyone else, like you or a million other people.
Yes, I see.
So, now what do you do?
I can't do a thing, Miss Conlon. It's your problem now.
Mine.
That's right. You can destroy that book and let Conrad go along his merry way. You can forget your father.
He's dead. Whatever happens to Conrad now won't help him.
That's true. But leave us out of it. If you let a man like Conrad go free when you could put him where he belongs, that wouldn't be any good, would it?
Oh, please stop it.
And maybe something you've never thought about, but...
What?
Someday your Tommy might find out.
Oh, no.
You've got nothing to be ashamed of. It wasn't you. It was your father. Why don't you start with a clean page? If this Tommy's a right guy, you'll understand. Well, Miss Conlon?
Hello, Tommy. Darling, I want you to come over right away. There's something we've got to talk over. All right, dear.
I'll give 10-1 on Tommy, Ruth.
Of notorious racketeer after 5 years. Dead man's notebook.
Forget that, Susie. Turn to the society page.
Oh, thanks.
Here. Now, read that.
Mr. and Mrs. Tommy Gibson leave for Bahamas on honeymoon. Gee, the Bahamas. You must feel just like stupid, Mr. Holliday.
The word is Cupid, Susie. And I'm dressed differently.
Mr. Holliday.
Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville with an original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. Production is supervised by Vern Carstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
Hot Box, an episode of Box 13. Alan Ladd, our star. A syndicated broadcast from December 26th, 1948. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden era. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website, where you'll find much more info about the radio theater, including detailed show playlists and also streaming audio, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. And this is program number 1603. We'll round out the hour with an episode of On Stage, a series of radio plays, the series created by Elliot Lewis, and the series starring Elliot as well as his wife Kathy Lewis. This CBS broadcast, episode number 24 in the series, originally airing June 18th of 1953. It's entitled Ideal Couple.
Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Kathy Lewis, Elliot Lewis. two of the most distinguished names in radio, appearing each week in their own theater, starring in a repertory of transcribed stories of their own and your choosing. Radio's foremost players in radio's foremost plays. Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Lewis. Good evening. May I present my wife, Kathy?
Good evening.
We're privileged tonight to introduce to you a new author. The young man is better known as an actor and announcer, but as you will soon hear, he also can write more than his name.
May we present Tom Dixon?
Good evening.
The play is called An Ideal Couple. And since Tom wrote it and also has the other gifts Elliot mentioned, he will play the radio announcer in the story.
So, Tom, Kathy, here we go with An Ideal Couple. Mrs. Johnson, I'll bet you say that to all the boys.
I don't know all the boys.
Oh, you are the sweetest talking little lady we've met in a long, long time. Mr. Johnson, how do you ever hold your own being married to a woman with such a way with words?
Well, it's all right.
All right, huh? Now tell me, when is this gift of gab of hers most apparent?
Well, you know...
I'll bet it's twice as powerful when the little darling wants a new hat, huh?
At least twice.
Now let's get on with the more serious aspects of the situation. Mrs. Johnson, do you know why the Johnsons are on our program, happy, though married?
Oh, I think I do.
How about you, Mr. Johnson?
I'm afraid not.
You mean you don't know why you're here?
No, I don't.
Oh, do you have a surprise coming to you? Because the judges have decided that Mrs. Johnson's letter was the best received in this month's contest, which makes the Johnsons our ideal couple on Happy, Though Married. I told you I had a surprise to you, Mr. Johnson. How do you feel now?
Bewildered.
Bewildered, huh? How about you, Mrs. Johnson? How do you feel?
Just wonderful.
I'll bet you do. Well, before we tell you about those grand surprise gifts our sponsors have lined up for you, let's sketch in a bit of your married life to prove that you deserve to be our ideal couple. Now, to start with, Mrs. Johnson, how long have you been married?
25 years this month.
25 years. Now, that deserves a hand. Now, how long did you know each other before you became engaged?
Oh, we knew each other from the time we were children, but we didn't start going together until Stan finished college.
Now, how did your first date come about?
We really didn't have a first date. I went to a high school graduation party with another beau. And, well, you know how those things happen.
Oh, do I? Mr. Johnson looked pretty good to you, huh?
Well, yes.
Now, I want you to listen to the song Larry Robbins is going to play on the organ. Larry? You know what that song is?
No.
No.
That's one of the songs that was popular in those days when you two fine people first met. A song that we understand was played at that party Mrs. Johnson was just talking about. Mr. Johnson, did you come to the party alone?
As a matter of fact, I did. Gee, Howie, I'd forgotten how cozy these hometown parties were.
After the glamour of the university? Sounds a bit silly, Stan.
Well, nothing there was quite like this.
You mean no party at State had Leola Webb in attendance?
Oh, is that obvious?
Obvious? Would a swat in the nose seem obvious? You've been staring at her all night.
She certainly has,
Bloom? That's the word you're searching for, my friend. Why don't you ask her to dance?
I'd like to, but she came with Benton, didn't she?
Don't let the great Jim Benton scare you off. Leola's just a passing fancy with that lad.
Why did he let her sit on the sidelines while he swaps jokes with the boys?
Maybe the jokes are safer.
What do you mean by that crack?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Besides, she's not sitting on the sidelines. She's heading this way. Bet she asked one of us to dance. I bet it's you.
Oh, you must be crazy.
Bet your butt.
Okay.
Hello, Stanley. When did you get back from the university?
Yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday.
wonderful. Just wonderful to have you back. This is a lady's choice, Stanley. I thought, oh, that is, if you care to...
To dance? Oh, brilliant.
Yes, would you care to?
Yeah, he'd be delighted.
Hello, Howard.
Good evening, Leola. Well, don't just stand there, old man. Get going.
Oh, yes. It was very nice of you, Leola, to invite me to dance with you.
It wasn't nice of me at all. I just wanted to dance with one of the handsomest men in the crowd.
Johnson, you owe me a dollar.
What do you owe that awful Howard Rhines $1 for?
Oh, nothing. That's just an old bet we had.
What do you see in Howard as a friend?
Oh, I don't know. We've been friends all our lives. Why do you ask?
I'm just curious.
You're with Jim Benton tonight, aren't you?
I suppose you could call it that, yeah. You dance very well, Stan.
Thank you. You dance beautifully. Just beautifully. I tell you, I think that Benton must be a bit silly in the head.
What do you mean, Stanley?
Passing up a chance to dance with you for a few... Oh, spoke too soon. Here he comes.
Really?
Just my luck.
I wonder what got into Mr. Benton.
Well, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean, isn't that just like a man? Ignore a girl all night, and then just when she starts to have a little fun...
So she asked you to dance, huh? You accepted, of course.
As a matter of fact, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I was too scared. A friend accepted for me.
Well, so much for your first romantic meeting. Now let's get to the proposal. And Mr. Johnson, don't tell me you let her do that, too.
No, I did that, all right.
How was he, Mrs. Johnson? Romantic?
Oh, my, yes.
Do you think you were romantic, Mr. Johnson?
I guess you could call it that, yes.
Did you get down on your knees?
Oh, I went farther than that. I was flat on my stomach. Yeah. That was the nicest picnic spread I've eaten in a long time.
I'm glad you like it.
And the spot. The brook, the trees, wildflowers. I haven't felt this good in my whole life.
Why should you feel so extra special good today?
Oh, a lot of reasons. The food was good. The spot is lovely. The grass feels good against my belly. Excuse me, stomach. And the greatest reason, I guess, is because you're here.
Really, Sam?
I mean it. You're wonderful. It's just too bad Mary and Bob couldn't come after accepting your invitation and everything.
Oh, you know, Bob and Mary, always changing plans at the last second.
Yeah. They do seem to be happily married, though.
I suppose so. Bob certainly isn't my idea of a good husband.
Oh? Who is?
Who's what?
Your idea of a good husband. Jim Benton?
Me? Marry Jim Benton? If Jim Benton were the last man alive, I'd be an old maid. Oh, I'd certainly like a nickel for every time Mr. Benton proposed to me.
I thought all the girls considered him such a whale of a catch.
Not this young lady.
What type of man would you, like to have for a husband?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody that's, considerate, steady, easy to get along with. Good looking, too, maybe.
Uh-huh. I see.
Why'd you ask, then?
Well, Leola, I...
Yes, Stan.
Leola, I don't qualify for looks much, but I am steady. I think I'm considerate, and people say I'm easy to get along with. We've been seeing each other pretty steady for almost a year now, ever since Jim Benton left town. And I honestly think you're the most wonderful girl I could ever hope to know. This might seem sudden to you, but I've thought about us an awful lot. And the more I think, the more I...
Go on, Stanley.
the more I think we could be happy together. I love you so very much. Please marry me. Huh?
Stanley, of course I'll marry you.
Well, how do you mean, Mr. Johnson? You were flat on your stomach.
We were on a picnic, and I was stretched out on my stomach in the grass.
And you accepted his proposal, Mrs. Johnson, even though he spoke it from that unromantic posture?
I certainly did.
And glad you did, too, I bet. Now about arguments. Did you have many disagreements in your 25 years of married life?
Oh, just a few. Little ones.
I see. Mr. Johnson, how did you settle your quarrels?
We compromised.
Compromised?
She saw things her way, and I saw things her way.
Dougie, darling, Mommy's right here to see your little man doesn't cry. There, no.
Leo, I think you picked Douglas up too much. Aren't you going to spoil him?
Spoil him? With love and affection? Spoil him, trying to make up for the things his father doesn't give him?
What thing?
But you think it's right to raise a child in a one-bedroom, walk-up apartment?
Well, it may not be right, dear, but it's all we can afford. Lots of kids grow up strong and healthy in worse places than this.
Not my son. I'll not raise my son in this dirty, ugly little flat.
Oh, it's not dirty and it's not ugly. Howard says he thinks you've done a wonderful job decorating the place.
Howard? What does he know about decorating?
Just thought you'd be pleased.
Oh, I'd be pleased if you'd stop spending so much of your time with Howard.
Why?
Well, he's not a good influence on you. He's lazy. He has no ambition.
Honey, please. In the first place, I don't spend all of my time with Howard. And besides, I'm not a child. I'm not liable to be influenced that easily. Now, please, let's just stop this. You're tired, and I don't blame you. But honestly, we're doing fine. Now, tell me the truth, aren't we?
Compared to Alice and Jim Benton, we're doing quite badly.
Jim Benton inherited a factory and $100,000. How can you compare us to Jim Benton? Be reasonable, dear.
Be reasonable? Why don't you start being reasonable? I don't worry about myself, Stanley, but we've got a son now. You've responsibilities. You can't afford to let yourself be pushed around. You can't afford to let yourself be talked out of a raise that you deserve. You've got a son.
Tell me what it is you want of me, Leola. I want to make you happy. I'll do everything in my power to make you happy. Just tell me what it is you want.
Those are big words.
I mean them. I swear it to you. I mean them.
You've got to stop sitting around, Stanley. You've got to progress. You're too easygoing for your own good.
You used to tell me you liked an easygoing man.
But you aren't going at all. You're at a standstill. You don't seem to have any ambition. You're so ridiculously content, and you haven't got anything.
I have a lovely wife and a fine son and a job and a place to live. What more do I need?
Do you think Jim Benton would be
Jim
content?
Jim Benton! You always come back to him. Benton was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He's a drunk, a boor, and a vicious snob, but you hold him up as a shining example of manhood. Why, I don't know. Sometimes I think you wish you'd married him.
He had only to ask me.
What?
You heard me.
I'll see you later.
Where are you going?
Does it really matter?
No, Dougie, no. Did that mean old daddy of yours slam the door and make my little baby boy cry?
Saw things her way and you saw things her way. Oh, that's pretty good, Mr. Johnson. It's just such a sense of humor about serious matters that made you and Mrs. Johnson this month's ideal couple on Happy Though Married. And now, in just a moment, we'll continue your story. But first...
You are listening to Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Tonight's play, An Ideal Couple. With warm weather here and people outdoors more often, this is a good time to get safety-minded about our timberlands. 9 out of 10 of last year's foremost fires were man-made. Americans have a vital stake in our woodlands and their contribution to national defense. Don't burn them up. Let them grow. Crush cigarettes out, really out. Douse campfires thoroughly. Turn them over and douse them again. Prevent forest fires. Save America's timber reserves.
And here we are back on Happy Though Married. So far, we've found that this month's ideal couple, Mr. and Mrs. Stanley Johnson, met at a party. She asked him for a dance. He proposed while lying on his stomach in the grass at a picnic, and that they faced their little differences with humor and compromise. Now, just a few more questions, and we'll present them with a host of surprise gifts from our sponsor. Now, for instance, how about vacations? Did you spend them together or separately?
Well, the first few we spent separately, but we've spent them together ever since.
Why did you start out separately?
Well, I liked to fish, but Leola didn't.
I learned to like fishing.
How about that? She learned to like fishing?
Ah, that was one corking good meal, my friend.
So it was.
Not a Stan. Anything new?
Why, yeah.
Look, I've known you for 100 years. I can read your moods like a book. You've been gathering wool all through lunch. What's up?
Nothing.
Leola? Did she find out we're still having lunch together?
Yeah.
Look, Stan, don't let it get you down. We can just as easily skip these lunches. Don't be blue, boy. You're forgetting our annual 2-week quest for those beautiful mountain trout is only a month away.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Leola wants to go along.
Oh?
She said she hated to be away from me. She said she realized I needed a rest, but she thought it was selfish of me to go away alone when she doesn't get any time off with any of her friends. Well, with the boy and everything.
Huh?
And, well, it kind of surprised me because, well, you know, she doesn't really like the great out of doors, as she calls it. And it's real sweet of her to want to go along with us when she doesn't really like it that much.
With you?
What?
Go along with you. She knows I won't go if she goes.
Why do you say that? That's not true. She said what a good time the three of us would have.
She didn't mean it. She wants you 52 weeks out of the year. She certainly doesn't want to give you up for 2 weeks to me and some fish. She's going to horn in on that, too, so she'll take everything that you have that's you and destroy
it. All right, Howie, that's enough.
It's true, you poor, stupid jerk. Can't you see it's true?
I said that's enough. Now, cut it out. You've no reason to talk about her like that. She's my wife. Cut it out.
All right. I'm sorry, Stan.
That's all right. Don't talk about it anymore.
No, really. You're quite right. I had no reason to speak that way. I'm sorry.
Talk as if I were unhappy. How I tell you, I'm not unhappy.
Okay, Stan, let's forget I mentioned it, huh?
Those fishing trips were fun.
That they were, my friend. That they were.
Maybe next year.
Oh, my, Mrs. Johnson, you killed me. Just like that, she says, I learned to like fishing. Oh, no wonder you're an ideal couple. Well, we're getting close to those payoff gifts from our sponsors. But first, let me ask you about your family. Did you raise any children?
Just one.
A boy or a girl?
A boy, Douglas.
And judging from the gleam in your eye, Mrs. Johnson, he's Mama's pet.
Oh, he's a wonderful boy.
Mr. Johnson, does Douglas favor you or his mother?
Well, there the boy was really lucky.
Why?
Well, he looks like me, and he acts like his mother.
After a thorough review of the case of the People versus Douglas Johnson, in which the defendant has been found guilty as accused, the court passes the following sentence. The theft of $250 represents a major crime. But in the opinion of the court, since this is the defendant's first offense and the money has been returned, society's demand for punishment in this case might only make a hardened criminal out of a sensitive, restless boy. Therefore, the court sentences you, Douglas Johnson, to 2 years in prison, sentence suspended.
You are hereby placed in the custody of your parents for the duration of said sentence. Court dismissed.
Oh, Doug. Doug, my baby.
I'm glad you're free, son. I can't say that I'm happy about the whole thing, but maybe it's taught you a lesson.
Lesson, indeed. Doug would never have taken that $250 if you'd given him a little more spending money.
No boy of 18 needs
more than
what I...
I know. Then there's the line, when I was a boy, I only got $1 a week. Well, your folks were poor. We're not. But you insist on raising Doug like he belonged to a family of paupers. I know my boy. He's not a common thief. If you'd only give him a decent allowance.
I can only say, Mr. Johnson, that if your son is as handsome as you and as charming as his mother, he must be quite a boy. Well, as our ideal couple, you've enjoyed a rich, full life together. Now, what about the future? Mrs. Johnson, what are your plans?
I think I'll start spending a little of that money we've worked so hard to save.
Stacking new hats every day, huh? How about you, Mr. Johnson? What are you going to do with the future?
Well, now that I'm 55, I think I finally acquired the wisdom to start living like a kid of 25.
Sam, for the 25 years we've been sneaking lunches in this back alley greasy spoon, I've always wound up by saying, that was a corking good meal. Or words to that general effect. Today I can't honestly say that.
Why not, Howie? I thought the steak was pretty good.
A meal is more than food, Stan. It's an occasion for comradeship, conviviality, and general good cheer, and you, my lifelong crony, have been anything but the ideal companions for such an event.
I'm sorry.
There you sit, a retired businessman. You've achieved a goal that few men ever reach. You should be bursting with pride and happiness.
I know. I just seem to have lost interest in things.
Lost interest in things? Sam, my boy, you've lost more than that. You've lost your life. They've squashed you down to the size of a worm.
Who?
Don't be evasive. Your wife, Leola. Your son, Doug, that's who. Between the two of them, they've knocked the stuffings out of a wonderful guy and left you. Whatever it is that you've become.
Shut up, Howie.
Okay.
No. Don't shut up. You're right. I'm sorry. But it stings to hear someone put into words the secret thoughts with which you've lived intimately for years. I'm 55. I have money, position, a wife, and a son. And I'm terribly unhappy because none of it gives me pleasure.
Stan, you're only 55. And why don't you do something about it?
What can I do to change it now?
You've even lost the power to hope. How does a man get that way? What makes you play act at being the ideal husband for so long? You haven't loved Leola for years, have you? Have you?
No. Not for years.
All right, then why do you stick?
I don't know. First it was Doug, I guess. Then it was a sense of duty. Lately, habit.
Habits can be broken, you know.
How?
Well, to start with, why don't you join me in my life's big moment? That world cruise I was telling you about. You've gone for one whole big, beautiful year. Love to have you along. I leave next Friday night?
I couldn't.
Stan, do I have to start painting the dreary picture of your future if you don't make the break?
No, no. I'm fully aware of those horrors. A trip around the world. It'll be fun, all right.
It'll make up for all those fishing trips we never had.
When are you leaving?
Next Friday night.
All right, I'll go.
Good. That's just fine, Stan.
I promised Leola I'd go to a radio broadcast with her on Friday afternoon. She wrote a letter or something, I don't know. Then we'll leave Friday night.
Friday night. Then you'll be free of it, Stan, on Friday night.
Oh, and I'll bet at 55, Mr. Johnson, you'll put to shame any squirt of 25. Well, there they are, ladies and gentlemen, the Johnsons. This month's ideal couple on our program, happy though married.
Mrs. Johnson's letter, awarded first place by our judges, is going to win for this ideal couple the following wonderful prizes. First, a set of beautifully matched wardrobe trunks. Inside, you'll find clothing for both of you to last for years. We secretly got your measurements. Besides clothing, you'll find jewelry, shaving accessories, toiletries, sewing kit, even shoelaces. Everything needed to clothe and keep a man and wife in comfort for a long, long while. Because in just 30 seconds, you will be whisked from the studio and taken by special limousine to the airport. A plane is waiting there to fly you to the coast, so you'll board one of the largest luxury liners afloat to start a six-month fully paid cruise and tour of the continent of Europe. All this to start right now because you are our ideal couple. On your way and bon voyage!
Ideal Couple, starring Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. In a moment, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis will tell you about next week's play. Tomorrow night, there's music in the air on CBS Radio. Music and songs of foreign-born composers. Hear baritone host Donald Richards, soprano Camilla Williams, tenor Clark Dennis, song stylist Betty Cox, and Alfredo Antonini's orchestra with Avalon, Swedish Rhapsody, Alexander's Ragtime Band, I'm Walking Behind You, and many other top hits. Remember, tomorrow night on most of these stations, there's music in the air. And now, once again, Kathy and Elliot Lewis.
Tom Dixon's Venture into Writing. An ideal couple, with Tom playing the program master of ceremonies.
And Paul Frees grew young and then old with us.
Next week, we're going to do a play about the same kind of people, same age and circumstances, and also with a child. And by showing the other side of the coin, see what else can be done with three lives.
The story was written by Shirley Gordon, and she calls it A Day to Remember. It's fine listening for this time of the year.
Until next week, then, thank you for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Music for tonight's story was composed and conducted by Fred Steiner. The Kathy and Elliot theme is by Ray Noble, and the program is transcribed and directed by Mr. Lewis. George Walsh speaking. Sunday afternoons, hear the World Music Festivals on the CBS Radio Network.
On Stage, an episode entitled Ideal Couple. Elliot and Kathy Lewis are stars. That CBS broadcast from June 18th, 1953. That wraps it up for this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. I hope you enjoyed my selections. Join me again soon for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.